This is the Country Hour with Megan Hughes on ABC Radio Queensland.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your company on the Country Hour today. In the northwest, the possibility of more rain is making graziers anxious. This comes as the community rallies together to support one another. I'll take you there shortly. But first, here's an update on the latest weather warnings.
ABC Radio, severe weather information.
In North Queensland, a severe weather warning remains in place for the North Tropical Coast from north of Cooktown and Hopevale down south through Cairns and Townsville to Mackay. A tropical low approaches the northeast tropical coast, bringing heavy to locally intense rainfall and damaging winds today and during the weekend. The latest information from the Bureau is suggesting that this low may turn into a Category 1 cyclone just as the system approaches the coast by tomorrow night at 10 p.m. However, the heavy rainfall and damaging wind impacts are likely to be similar, whether or not it becomes a tropical cyclone. For areas between Port Douglas and Mackay, across the North Tropical Coast, Herbert and Lower Burdekin, and northern parts of Central Coast and Whitsundays regions, there will be a risk of heavy to locally intense rainfall developing from tonight. It'll start north of Townsville and extend south across the warning area into Saturday. So expect 6 hourly totals between 90 to 170 millimetres, with isolated falls in excess of 250 millimetres being possible. 24-hour totals may reach 275 millimetres and totals in excess of 400 millimetres are possible. Damaging winds with gusts up to 90 to 100 kilometres an hour are possible from this afternoon north of Port Douglas and will extend south along the coast throughout the warning area tomorrow. As for the current conditions and warnings, the Cairns Local Disaster Management Group has issued a Watch and Act warning to monitor conditions for moderate flooding on the Mulgrave and Russell Rivers. In particular, Pete's Bridge and parts of the Goldsborough area and low-lying areas of Gordonvale, parts of Babinda and surrounding areas including East Russell and Ubenangie. There are major flood warnings as well for the Horton River catchment and Herbert River that are in place. So for the Horton River catchment, major flooding is possible at Garoo late Saturday morning, with forecast rain developing across the catchment overnight tonight. River and creek levels may experience rapid rises, resulting in possible major flooding at Garoo. For the Herbert River, major flooding is likely along the lower Herbert catchment from Saturday. Recent rainfall has resulted in elevated river levels, and forecasted rainfall across Saturday is likely to cause major flooding across the catchment. There are other moderate flood warnings in place as well for the Tully River, and a broad flood watch has also been issued for the coastal rivers between the Daintree to Pioneer Rivers and the Cape York Peninsula. And if you need sandbags, they are available at multiple council and SES locations. So check with SES and council where you can get them. Now, for northwest and western Queensland, you should continue to stay informed across the regions as flooding continues over coming days. Resupply and recovery assistance is in progress across multiple regions, and forecasted rainfall over the weekend may also cause further flooding. There are multiple flood warnings current, including a major flood warning for the Flinders River, with major flooding continuing at Walker's Bend and moderate flooding occurring at Richmond. This morning, the levels at Walker's Bend was at 15.38 metres and steady. River levels will continue to remain high for several days. There are also moderate flood warnings for the Thompson, Norman and Georgina Rivers, with flood levels likely to continue in areas like Winton, Normanton, Kamula Park and Longreach over the weekend. There are also minor and general flood warnings covering the Western, Diamantina, Nicholson and Gilbert Rivers, as well as Eyre Creek. For all the latest weather details and warnings, you can visit the Bureau of Meteorology's website, the Queensland Disaster website, which is disaster.qld.gov.au, and your local council's disaster dashboard. And keep listening to us here on ABC Radio. We are your emergency broadcaster. And I'll have more information when the Weather Bureau joins me after 12:30.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
The possibility of more rain in northwest Queensland is making a lot of graziers anxious. They're hard at work while there's still blue skies, slinging hay and doing whatever they can for their weaners and their cattle. Michaela King is on Cremona Station near Julia Creek and tells Hannah Walsh they're worried, but can only take it as they come, as it comes.
Just the cattle losses and obviously fences that are going to have gone down and private roads impacted and whatnot, but yeah, mainly the cattle losses is the biggest one.
And do you have any idea what kind of cattle losses?
Oh, it's really hard to tell right now until we can get around properly and have a look. We have had a fair bit of loss, but yeah, I can't put a number on it just yet, sorry.
This has been going on for some time. Like, how are you guys feeling there?
Yeah, we're okay. Obviously, it is a big devastation to happen, losing a lot of cattle. But yeah, we've got each other and we've got a really, really good community and great friends and family around us. So that's helping and, yeah, just being able to call up and have a yarn with someone and, yeah, get your feelings out a little bit. We're pretty lucky, yeah.
What's it like seeing your weaners and potties just fighting for their lives?
Yeah, it's terrible, honestly. They fought so much in their first start of life with pulling them off their mums early to freshen their mums up and then putting them on weaner meal and just, yeah, driving that into them and getting them so strong and to a point that you think, oh, yeah, they might be all right, to then, yeah, going over and seeing what had actually happened and losing so many. But we're pretty lucky at the moment. Each day, you know, we're losing a couple, but it's not like the initial big hit. And we're just keeping them alive at the moment and they are getting stronger. They're on the road to recovery. Hopefully they, yeah, keep going.
And an event like this, what kind of toll do you think that this takes on graziers across the region? Like, there's always this assumption that graziers and people in the West are resilient and strong, but, you know, how much of a toll do you think this is taking?
Yeah, look, we are all very strong people and quite resilient, but, yeah, it's definitely going to take a toll. I can't speak for everyone, but, yeah, it is definitely going to take a toll. Obviously, it's our livelihood and a lot of people's sole incomes. So, yeah, that is definitely going to take a toll. But like I said before, we have got a really good community and great people around us to just be there for everyone and through the whole thing, and we're all in this together. So I think, yeah, we will make it out and we've got each other's back. So that's the biggest thing.
And you've got your family support system there. Have you seen anyone sort of in your family break down?
Yeah, we've definitely had our moments and our days of when it just gets a little bit too much. But all in all, we're pretty good. You just got to, yeah, put your head down and keep going, because there's still weaners to feed, there's still potties to spray every day and hay to be slung. So, yeah, you just really got to have your moment and get going.
That sort of seems to be, while there's sort of clear skies at the moment, everyone's just getting out and doing what they can. But the possibility of more rain is probably making some people feel anxious. How is it making you guys feel?
Yeah, it is a bit scary. It's very scary, actually. Just knowing that, you know, everyone's getting to this point where we can get out, we can sling hay, we can feed what we can around the house and sand ridges and stuff, then to have the thought of that is quite scary. But, you know, we just got to take it day by day and just keep doing what we're doing and get all the cattle as strong as we can and onto the high ground that they can get to and, yeah, keep up the hay and whatnot to them. Yeah, it is definitely scary and we are a bit worried about it, if I'm going to be honest. I'm sure everyone else is. But, yeah, it's scary and, yeah, quite daunting, but you just got to take it as it comes, hey?
Michaela King is from Cremona Station near Julia Creek speaking with Hannah Walsh. Now, last year in 2025, Rising Together for Rural Queensland started as a way to help producers and communities impacted by the Southwest Queensland flooding disaster. Now, the group is back fundraising for Northwest Queensland as they live through their third major flooding event in 6 years. Amy Kewin is the founder and coordinator of the group. She tells Madeline McCosker about the importance of supporting the ag industry and the communities that surround it.
Rising Together was, yeah, really spur of the moment thing. started off as a text message from one of my friends, Charlotte, and then reached out to our other friend, Bella, and we formed Rising Together, I suppose, because we felt so helpless but so affected and touched by what was happening in the Southwest. And yeah, we hosted a ball last year in Brisbane, and we hoped that that was just going to be a one-time thing, you know, the event, I suppose. And while we're still working with Farm Angels and people in the Southwest behind the scenes, yeah, we really hoped that, I suppose, that was all that the public was going to see of Rising Together, because, yeah, we'd hate to think that it was going to be needed again. But here we are, only a matter of months later, and, yeah, hoping to do some good work again for people that are a lot closer to our hearts as well.
And so, yeah, you've started up again this year to help out communities and producers in the Northwest that are still, you know, seeing widespread flooding and obviously very early on in the impacts of this flooding event. So I guess why did you decide to come back and help this community out after, I guess, the success of what you guys did in the Southwest?
I suppose why not is the real question. I'm from Mount Isa, and some of the people that are affected are my nearest and dearest. And yeah, these people faced, you know, an event like this in 2019, and it's too soon for them to be having to face it again. And honestly, without them last year, we would not have had the success that we did with fundraising for the Southwest. The people in the North were some of the biggest supporters of our Rising Together cause last year. So it was, yeah, really, there was no time for questioning whether we were going to start up again. We just had to. And yeah, if it's really the least that we can do.
And you're hoping to raise $100,000 through crowdsourcing. Can you tell me a bit about where that money is going to go and how it's going to benefit these communities?
Yeah, we're partnering again with Farm Angels. Tash and her team are amazing, and yeah, we're really privileged that they were so willing to come back on board with us. And yeah, we can't thank them enough for having, I suppose, the confidence in us and our campaign to make it such a difference. But yeah, the funds are going directly to people affected by the floods in the North, and funds will be used to provide immediate disaster relief, but also long-term recovery support and community engagement initiatives, with, you know, helping out those graziers and people affected, not just in the immediate aftermath, but also on that long road of recovery that they're facing.
Yeah, and you mentioned 2019 earlier, and the fact that Northwest Queensland was such a big support for the Southwest last year when they were in their flooding disaster. I guess, can you talk to me about why it is so important to support these initiatives and to really get behind these communities when they are in these really difficult times, and how, you know, the water might be going down, but this is far from over, and how this support really helps?
Yeah, I suppose while the flooding is happening now and, you know, the water might be, you know, might be receding, but the road to recovery is long, and they're hardly back on their feet, if at all, really fully back on their feet from 2019. And I think that was the message that they portrayed so clearly to us last year, is that these people in the Southwest were going to have such a long road ahead. And, you know, they were only 6 years down the track and they still hadn't fully recovered. And now they're facing it again, and in some places worse. So, you know, the road to recovery is so long, and we get this, I suppose they get this rap where the Northwest is such a resilient community, and that it is really resilient, but there's only so much that they can take without, you know, keeping their head fully above the water, I suppose. And if we can get behind them and provide some support, you know, from far afield, from the floodwaters, yeah, they need it, and there's only so much that they can take without us stepping in and helping them out as well.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, while they are very resilient communities, as you said, you know, doing this again just 6 years after, even less for some people. There was, you know, flooding in 2023 as well, up around the Gulf. And to be kind of dealing with these things in such quick succession is not what anyone expected. And it's not an easy path to recovery by any means. And this kind of support from, you know, from, as you said, far afield, really does mean a lot to these communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, they are honestly the first people to give you the shirt off their back if something was going on in your lives. And I think it's time that, yeah, people really understand that ultimately that's where their food comes from, and not only the food but those communities, the grocer, the post office, and they're all hurting, and maybe it's time that we do for them what they would do for us and get behind them.
Amy Kewin from Rising Together for Rural Queensland speaking with Madeline McCosker. If you'd like to donate, you can head to Rising Together Queensland on Facebook or Instagram to find the link. It is 20 minutes past 12.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app, this is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
So the latest update from the Department of Primary Industries is that 31,790 head of livestock have been reported missing or deceased by landholders across the Northwest. Tony Perrott, Minister for Primary Industries, is in the Northwest currently meeting with producers and assessing the damage from flooding as waters continue to recede. He tells Madeline McCosker that the number of livestock has come from 52 surveys, so those numbers will continue to grow.
Yeah, well, I flew into Richmond yesterday, met up with Mayor John Wharton, caught up with AgForce President Shane McCarthy, and just got out on the ground, caught up with graziers just to see the direct impact to them, and it is significant. Obviously, it varies across the region, but those graziers that have been in the direct line of this weather event from last week have, you know, certainly got some serious challenges, and, you know, obviously we're seeing a lot of livestock that are now, dying, that have, perishing. So, no, it's really challenging, and I just wanted to get on the ground just to meet with those graziers, just get a full understanding of the impact directly on them and the ongoing challenge that they've got in dealing with it.
Yeah, and a lot of what we've been hearing is, you know, no one was expecting an event like this so soon after what we saw in 2019 and then in 2023 for some parts as well. A lot of people were still in that recovery process. So what are you hearing from people on the ground about, I guess, how they feel like they're going to be able to recover from this?
Yeah, well, look, the impact is significant, and when you see, obviously, livestock that are dying, livestock that they're, that they're having to put down, it takes a serious toll on them. And of course, they were still in recovery from 2019. A lot of people, weren't expecting, a similar event again. And while, perhaps it's not quite as widespread as that event, those graziers in that. That area that's been hit is just as significant, and now, obviously they're just, they thought they may have got through it a little bit easier, but the observations yesterday and the reports that were given, directly to me is that, a lot of livestock now are really struggling. Obviously pneumonia, rain scald, and then all the issues that come from that, and I observed that directly yesterday. So, they're doing the best in very, very difficult circumstances, but still challenging because, a lot of property owners are just starting to get round their land, just starting to observe what's going on, and they're doing the very, very best that they can. But, the numbers are starting to mount significantly.
Mm. And it is heartbreaking to see, the cattle that survived the flooding that are now dealing with, as you said, pneumonia, rain scald, the issues that come from that and the bacteria that's in the soil. Talking to producers, these animals are their life. They care so deeply about them. It's heartbreaking to see them struggling with this, So I guess, what are you hearing from people on the ground about what's needed at this point of the recovery?
Yeah, well, look, it's just, it's continued to unfold, and that's the challenge that they've got. Of course, from a Department of Primary Industries perspective, we're offering all the advice that we possibly can, the support that's needed, and that's a critical component to make certain that the support that's given by government actually meets the need on the ground. But these producers are just starting to get out across their country, just starting to get a clear understanding of that impact, and it is challenging, as you say. This is their livelihood, and particularly with livestock, it is absolutely heartbreaking. These people have put a lot of effort, the genetic improvements that they've got in their cattle, the generational breeding that's gone into their herds, is impacted directly, and that's the challenge that they see. They all their hard work has you know, is challenged at this time, and it's you know, not just the livestock, it's just the you know, the damage to infrastructure on their property, you know, thousands of kilometres of fencing that's been impacted in some areas, property tracks just simply being able to get round on their property. So it's an enormous, you know, workload that's going to be ahead of these primary producers, and it's, you know, just critical that, you know, the government actually understands that and can provide the support and advice, you know, where it's required.
And do you have the latest figures on livestock losses? I understand that the sort of the latest figures come out at 4 PM each day. What's the update there?
Yeah, so the self-reported livestock losses to date, you know, have climbed above 30,000, which is obviously significant. So we've had 52 disaster impact surveys, you know, come back to the department. Of course, you know, producers, you know, are doing the best to get that information in where they can. Of course, they've got a lot of work on their hands to be able to do what they do on their property. But the more information that we can get, but look, anecdotally, of, you know, and what I heard yesterday, those figures are going to rise significantly. And, you know, I'll be back out on the ground. I'm in Cloncurry this morning. I'll be back out very, very shortly on the ground with Mayor Greg Campbell, just meeting, you know, producers again. I'm here with the LGAQ, got the president of the LGAQ here as well. So, you know, we're on the ground just, you know, talking to people, just getting that understanding, but that is significant. And, you know, we expect those livestock numbers to, you know, deaths to grow significantly in the next week or two.
Yeah, I mean, if that's only 52 surveys, you know, there's a lot more to come in.
Yeah.
And you know, over 30,000 livestock dead or missing from just 52 surveys. Yeah.
That's it. That's it. So, you know, and we'll be in Julia Creek later this afternoon too. So, you know, we'll be in the heart of where the impact has been. And, you know, I expect, you know, as I talk to producers that, you know, we're going to get some, you know, more information with respect of livestock. But you know, what I observed yesterday, you know, obviously there's a lot of livestock at the moment that are, you know, in difficult, you know, situation. Mm.
Do you know where the bulk of those 52 surveys have come from? Because, you know, we saw at the start of this event, it was that the rain was just kind of sitting over the Gulf, and areas like Normanton were badly affected, and then it moved slightly south and it sat over Julia Creek and McKinley. And then over the weekend, we got a hit of rain at Richmond, which, you know, turned things pretty bad there.
Yeah.
So are we seeing just those early stages of surveys come through from those earlier areas that were impacted?
Yeah, look, the bulk of those disaster impact surveys that have been returned have come from the McKinley and Richmond Shires, which sort of meet, you know, obviously is our understanding of where the greatest impact has been initially, so, you know, with those floodwaters. So, you know, and as I, you know, said, I expect that those, you know, those survey numbers will start to increase, but that information, you know, is vital as it comes back in, and as, you know, producers can provide that. But I also understand it's challenging. It really is. Like when they go out and they see that emotionally, it's difficult. And talking to producers again last night, they're challenged by it. Absolutely, you know, emotionally. You know, just drains them. There was some initial hope that perhaps it wasn't quite as bad as what was, you know, 2019, and perhaps, as I said earlier, the area is not quite as broad, but it's certainly in that impact area. It's just as severe, and, you know, when we see that, you know, on the back of the floods, you know, further southwest, only, you know, less than 12 months ago, you know, in the impact where there was, a, you know, 200,000 livestock that perished. So yeah, it's challenging times for those producers. And that's why we just need to, you know, obviously, you know, make certain that the support meets the need, but those producers are doing the very, very best they can in, you know, challenging circumstances.
Tony Perrott, Queensland's Minister for Primary Industries, speaking with Madeline McCosker. Now, the Premier, David Crisafulli, is providing an update on the tropical low in the far north as we speak. He says the system is expected to move towards the coast during the weekend, with the area between Port Douglas and St Lawrence on cyclone watch.
There are, however, three immediate areas of focus for us: rainfall, flooding and livestock. And that's following the earlier event, and I want to touch on that because I do want the people of Western Queensland to know that they haven't been forgotten, and we will continue to make sure we engage with them as this system comes on and as they continue to deal with their challenges. So let me start with rainfall. There is every likelihood that there will be large rainfalls starting from tomorrow and into the weekend, and indeed next week. And it is important that we do that, because Many of these areas, which are expecting falls into the hundreds of millimetres per 24-hour window, many of them come with already sodden catchments. We're talking about areas, in some cases, who have had in the proximity of half a metre rainfall in the last 7 days. And that does provide a big challenge, particularly on flooding. And that's where I want to turn to next. Major flood warnings are current for the Horton and the Flinders River, and the Herbert is currently moderate to major. There's different parts of the Herbert. But there are many other catchments that are at minor level, and we are obviously watching those because they are a water-filled area, and with those full catchments comes large risk of flooding. And that is a really big concern for us, hence the reason why I wanted Matt from the Bureau to speak to you. Let me turn to livestock, because there's a real issue for our friends in Western Queensland. We've received just over 50 stock assessments from people on the ground, and already over 30,000 livestock losses have been recorded. This number is going to grow, and it's going to grow significantly. This is only those people who've been able to take the time to be able to do it. The likelihood of stock losses exceeding this level by many times is real, and that's why it's important that we continue to lend support in every way that we can. And I do want to acknowledge the visit by the Prime Minister and indeed the opposition leader to Western Queensland, so that we know that they won't be forgotten. Fodder drops are continuing, and that work has spared what would have been far more losses of livestock. The risk, though, remains with things like pneumonia and bacteria, because when animals are standing in water, there is a real risk with that. So there will be further losses that will be recorded in the days ahead, and further losses that will happen, which is very, very traumatic for those communities.
Premier David Crisafulli. Next, I'll take you to the north, where preparation is underway for this tropical low system.
ABC Breakfast. There's never been a better way to start your day. We're local like you, and we'll be right here every weekday when the sun rises. Join us for breakfast, weekday mornings on ABC Local Radio.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
I'll get the Bureau for you shortly to check on the tracking of this tropical low system. But right now in the far north, Robert Lyon is a cane farmer at Abergarry, west of Ingham. He has been talking to Sophie Johnson about how he's feeling ahead of this tropical low that's off the coast.
Well, like a lot of people, when a tropical low starts to come down our North Queensland coast this time of year, we just got to wait and see where it's going to cross and what eventuates out of it. At present, it's a low. Is it going to form a cyclone? If it is, how big a cyclone? And get prepared as good as we can and hang on.
For you on farm, what's your biggest concern?
My biggest concern where we are up here, we get the floodwater out of the top of the Herbert from Ravenshoe Herberton, and we got a bottleneck near the college, and it holds the water back. So we have a significant rise. In 1967, the river level rose 90 feet from summer level. So that's the difference between summer level and a major flood for us up here.
And in terms of wind, will the cane be able to withstand that?
The wind, it creates an issue this time of year. We have our crop as an advanced stage. We've had some good rain during the year. So we've got, in some places, quite a little bit of cane showing. And some varieties are more vulnerable than others, and it will snap. So that will create crop losses for us if that is going to be the case.
Can you go into a bit more detail about why that cane would snap instead of fall over?
Well, it's at a stage where it's short enough that it's won't either that it'll tip in the ground, still tip, or it will break. So the wind's strong enough it will break it off at a snap point, and probably the first or second node of the cane. And that will retard its growth. From there, it will either side shoot and grow again. And that can happen to some of our varieties are more prone than others. In Yarsi, the water was over the cane and a lot of it here on the flats. So it didn't worry it, but it had more water over. But other places, no, it did snap the cane bad.
Is cane snapping this time round a concern shared by other farmers in the district?
Any person who's getting a cyclone or a severe storm, it's always an issue with some varieties of sugarcane. It can snap, yes.
And for the Ingham Township, I mean, it hasn't been that long. It's been 11 months since that major flooding disaster happened. I'm assuming everyone's still in a point of recovery.
Look, they'll be in recovery for quite some time to get things repaired. I know people have done land work to the headlands and stuff like that and have just finished it. Now they've had a flood already and it's washed some of that work away already, where they've repaired headlands and roads and things like that. So they're going to try and recover what they can and have to go around second time around to try and fix what had just been done because it was too fresh.
Yeah, because there was quite a bit of rain around here last week.
Yes, yes. Bottom End had minor flooding and nearly to moderate around the Halifax. So it gave, especially the Seymour area, as we saw, again, our highway cut, those people out there really got a hit of rain. You can't get 8 inches of rain two nights running and not expect some sort of damage.
So it's back-to-back repairs for some of those growers?
Back-to-back repairs, back-to-back finding the bank in the back pocket, yes.
And for more of those Ingham locals as well, how are they feeling?
Look, people have been through the flood and some of the new people here are not used to the flooding in our district. Flooding in Ingham is part of our history, just as that you've got to be prepared for it and take the best that you can and make the best out of it. Mentally, it always plays on people's minds.
Yeah, how is the mental health around town ahead of a potential low slash cyclone, whatever this system becomes?
There will be some very concerned people, businesses, growers, residents, and like I say, a lot of growers won't show their mental issues. It's just in the DNA. They'll bottle it up and it hurts, yeah.
Robert Lyon is a cane farmer at Abergarry, west of Ingham. He was speaking there to Sophie Johnson. Weather's up next, then afterwards more on how preparations are going in the far north.
An emergency can happen anywhere. There are three warning levels across Australia. Advice, Watch and Act, and Emergency. To learn more, go to the ABC Emergency website and stay listening to your emergency broadcaster, ABC Radio.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's time to check in on the weather, and Harry Clark joins me from the Bureau of Meteorology. Good afternoon, Harry.
Good afternoon, Megan.
So, this tropical low in the far north, what's the latest and where is it tracking?
Yeah, so we're still watching that tropical low develop. It's currently around 400 kilometres northeast of Cairns. It's pretty slow moving at the moment and was actually a little bit more slow moving than expected last night, meaning that the sort of onset of the weather has been delayed somewhat through the far north and north. We are still expecting that low to start tracking towards the coast overnight tonight, and at this stage looks like it will cross during the early hours of Sunday morning. Now, one of the key changes is we have got a little bit more confidence now. It's got a little bit more time over water that it will reach Category 1 tropical cyclone status before it crosses on early Sunday morning. A crossing location, likely anywhere between sort of Cairns all the way down to Eyre at this stage, so a very broad area I appreciate, but most likely probably around that Ingham area. But don't fixate too much on the exact location of crossing. The effects will be, particularly on the southern side, extending well outside that crossing area. So still looking at an increase in heavy rainfall and winds overnight tonight, but really more so during the course of Saturday, given that slightly slower track than initially expected.
Are there any other severe weather warnings for that northern area?
Yeah, so a tropical cyclone warning, which is for gales in the next 24 hours, extends between Port Douglas and Tully at the moment. Tropical cyclone watch between sort of Cardwell and Airlie Beach at the moment. That's for gales 24 to 48 hours from now. We're still looking at broad severe weather warning as well, stretching all the way from Cooktown down to Mackay. So essentially, heavy rain and damaging winds likely develop for those areas overnight tonight. Probably taking a little bit longer to get going in the areas Townsville and further south, more like during the day on Saturday. We could see damaging wind gusts around 90 kilometres an hour for those areas, particularly along the coastline and through exposed coastal locations and elevated areas. And rainfall-wise, still see the potential for heavy rainfall developing tonight, actually being pretty light today, all things considered. And the sort of worst of the rainfall will be on and south where that system crosses. So at this stage, the heavy rainfall probably likely to be largely south of Innisfail, but it would depend exactly on where this system crosses and then extending well south of there during the course of Saturday and Sunday.
Now, Sunday, after sort of what's happening Saturday, what can people expect?
Yeah, so you will have noted there's been a lot of uncertainty as to where the system goes in that medium term from Sunday onwards. Starting to get a bit more consensus now that that area of heaviest rain will start tracking further southeast. So start moving into that Mackay area, that Central Highlands and Coalfields area on Sunday and into Monday, even extending down towards Rockhampton potentially. So a bit of a stronger indication that Central Queensland will see some moderate to even heavy rainfall out of this for the latter part of the weekend and early next week. I guess speculating on rainfall totals is very difficult at this time range, but certainly 50 to 150 millimetres possible with the passage of this system Sunday and Monday as a cumulative total across those days. But that number is very much likely to change and jump around a little bit. But that is some good news for the northwest, although they will see a bit of rainfall, particularly in the upper part of the Flinders east of Hughenden as part of this system. Looks like the heaviest rainfall will track southeast towards the central Queensland rather than northwest across those already very heavily flooded areas.
Yeah, so northwest is not, I guess, expecting too much rain over the weekend?
Yeah, so the key watch point will be the upper Flinders catchment east of Hughenden. They're far enough east, they could see some of the heavy rainfall from this system. But other than that, we do see with that track towards the southeast, the heaviest rainfall staying out of the northwest and the Gulf Country. There will still be isolated showers and thunderstorms over the weekend and into early next week. But heaviest rainfall at this stage looking like it won't make it into the northwest, which is some good news, obviously, with the extensive flooding that's still ongoing. So I guess a little bit of rainfall, particularly in the upper parts of the Flinders catchment east of Hughenden, but through sort of Mount Isa, Julia Creek and Gulf Country area, just I guess the standard showers and thunderstorms rather than anything particularly enhanced from the system.
So in terms of coastal waters, obviously there'll be some intense wind, as we've spoken about, in the far north, but what about around the rest of the coast?
Yes, we do have that gale warning current for the Townsville and Cairns waters today and in Torres Strait tomorrow, and strong wind warnings pretty much everywhere north of Mackay. The sort of remaining parts, the Gulf of Carpentaria, the Southern Gulf, seeing southeasterly winds around 15 to 20 knots, and further down the east coast for central Queensland waters, seeing those southeasterly winds or east to southeasterly winds generally around that 20 to 25 knot mark or 15 to 20 knot mark if you're in southeastern Queensland. So I guess winds certainly focused through the north and far north with a litany of warnings current, but elsewhere generally just fresh winds from the east.
And what about around the rest of the state, sort of southwest, southern, central Queensland? Any major rain or weather events over the coming days?
Yeah, look, southwest is probably seeing opposite weather to everywhere else. Sort of seeing the tail end of that very warm area of weather that's going through southern states. So birds will actually get quite hot conditions over coming days, 43 degrees today, 45 degrees tomorrow, and then a windy change on Sunday, but still heading for a top of 41. So a fair bit of heat through the southwest of Queensland, no real rain to speak of, potentially a smidgen of raised dust in some of those stronger southeasterlies over the weekend. Otherwise, through sort of the Wide Bay and southeast coast and Darling Downs, not too much, just some isolated coastal showers today and tomorrow, increasing a little bit on Sunday, but more so from Monday as we start seeing some of that remnant moisture from this tropical low make its way into southeastern and the southern interior of Queensland. So potentially a little bit of an increase in showers across southern Queensland from sort of Sunday, Monday, but at this stage the majority of the heavy weather looks to remain further north through the north and central parts of the state.
Harry, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks very much.
Harry Clark, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology.
On the ABC Listen app, stream a wide range of free audiobooks from the likes of Kate Morton, James Patterson, Candace Fox and William McInnes.
A man's got to have a hobby.
No catch, no cost. Find free audiobooks on the ABC Listen app.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
The rain has remained pretty constant in the far north near Innisfail, with totals of over 300 millimetres in the past 3 days, and it's not looking at stopping anytime soon. You just heard Harry from the Bureau talking about what the weather's going to be like there over coming days. Well, Mickey Buchanan is a banana farmer in the area and tells Sophie Johnson they're doing all they can to prepare for the potential low hitting in coming days.
So I think they predicted that it's now hitting Townsville, so hopefully we're okay, but definitely a little bit hair-raising just to know we've had all this rain and are potentially getting a bit of wind as well.
Yeah, why is that a concern for you?
So obviously I am a banana farmer, so just the fact that wind obviously takes, if depending on the kilometres of the wind, can uptake everything out, just every bunch standing.
How are the bananas looking at the moment after all that rain?
There's a few trees down just from the wet soil, but so far we're okay, just no wind as of yet.
How wet is that soil at your place?
Extremely wet. It is, yeah, just torrential. If you go out, you're just covered in mud. Everything is wet.
Have you been doing anything maintenance-wise ahead of the load that's coming in?
Yeah, so we tried to get around just maintenance to leave the whole farm just to prepare if we do get any rain. And then we also string the farm, so stringing all the trees together, getting ready to potentially get some wind.
Are you concerned about the quality of the bananas after this system at all?
Definitely. The wind can give the trees a bit of a shake around and bruise the fruit a tiny bit. But yeah, that's definitely something to look out for.
And what are the other workers doing?
So at the moment, everyone is in the paddock deleafing like crazy. Yeah, that's basically what everyone's doing, just trying to prepare.
What are you hoping for after this system passes through for your farm in recovery?
It'd be good to get a couple of days of sunshine just to dry everything out. But honestly, the way things are looking, I don't think we're going to get it.
This system's coming here, coming through in early January. Typically, we get these big wets sort of later in the month, February, March sort of area. How do you feel having this so early in the year?
Look, we are prepared for it. We normally start preparing around December, early December, for the possibility of getting a few storms. We had a little bit of a storm maybe a week ago now, so we knew that they were lingering, so we've started to prepare a bit earlier this year. So, yeah, just moving everything that could possibly get blown away indoors, starting to drop strings. In winter, we don't drop the strings, so we start to drop strings so that they can be tied around trees. The deleafing, just picking as much as the fruit that's ready as possible, so if we do get a little bit of wind, that it doesn't all blow down onto the ground.
Innisfail banana farmer Mickey Buchanan speaking to Sophie Johnson. Brand from Port Douglas has texted in. He said, "Hi Megan, the heavy rain in the far north is now affecting city folk as well as farmers. Cairns was put on level 4 water restrictions." He said, "The weather is now starting to get wild here as the East Coast low threatens to turn into a category 1 as it hits the coast tomorrow night." Yes. As what Brant said, Cairns is on level 4 water restrictions. So just having a look at the Cairns Disaster Centre, they said heavy rain is disrupting our water treatment and we need your help to preserve supplies. So it's okay to use water for drinking, cooking and bathing, but it is not okay to use it for watering gardens or lawns, washing vehicles or outdoor areas, filling pools, ponds or running fountains. Limit your water use to what is needed for your health and hygiene. If your water is ever disrupted, keep a store of drinking water and save rainwater, collect shower water or use pool water for toilets. More at council's website. It is 12 minutes to 1.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Heading away from the weather in the north of the state, summer for a lot of growers means time for spraying, but if it's not done properly, it can cause spray drift, which can cause harm to people, livestock and neighbouring crops. Jeffrey Carl is the manager of Policy Agvet Chemicals and Contaminants at the Department of Primary Industries. He explains how to spray safely.
Spray drift is essentially the movement of agricultural chemicals off target or off site, and it usually impacts a neighbour or somewhere downstream or downwind, where it can impact a crop, can impact pasture, can impact livestock, humans, or housing, or the community.
Is spray drift a big issue in Queensland? And do you know how many incidents there have been this year?
Look, spray drift occurs throughout the year in agricultural areas. However, it will depend on season to season and the specific areas across Queensland. Now, so therefore, the numbers of spray drift incidents will vary depending on the season, whether it's a dry season, wet season, all those sorts of things. So hard to quantify that for you.
Mm. What about this year? Have there been any significant incidences of spray drift?
So this calendar year, there have been no significant incidents of spray drift reported to the DPI, and we're pleased to hear that. And this is why we want to keep our message out at this point in time in the middle of the summer spray season, just to remind users and growers or contractors to use and apply chemicals appropriately in order to minimise spray drift.
So how do you minimise spray drift?
Okay, there's several ways to minimise spray drift. So it can be developing a spray plan, and that may include identifying downwind sensitive sites, such as a sensitive crop or a neighbouring house, communicating with the neighbour just about when you intend to spray, what you might be wanting to spray, selecting the right equipment and using the right equipment, and reading the label, understanding it, and following it.
What's the penalty for causing spray drift?
The penalties around spray drift, I suppose, vary. The key requirements really are that users should be following label instructions and ensuring that they're adhered to and keeping their chemical on site in the paddock. And that'll prevent any spray drift issues occurring.
So thinking of the weather conditions that can cause spray drift, what do people have to be aware of when they're deciding to spray?
It's a good one, because at this time of year, it's pretty tricky. We've got summer, we've got hot conditions, generally speaking. We can get windy conditions. And then, generally speaking, on the east coast of Australia, we have those inversion conditions at dawn, dusk and at night. The best weather to spray in is light, steady winds, moderate temperatures. Now, that's going to be difficult to get. However, growers need to pick the timing for the best conditions, look at their preferred weather apps, and communicate with their neighbours and have very good spray plans ready to go. Avoid spraying in extreme heat, extreme windy conditions, and ideally avoid spraying at dusk, dawn and at night.
Geoffrey Carl is the Manager of Policy AgVet Chemicals and Contaminants at the Department of Primary Industries. Now, this summer, Australian native bees will be buzzing around. Entomologist Dr. Brian Lessard is also known as Bri the Fly Guy, and he tells James Finlay some interesting information about Australia's native bees.
Native bees, believe it or not, are unbelievable, James. Sorry, I had
to. Very good. That's okay.
I love the blue-bounder bee because they just look like stripy teddy bears. They're fluffy and yellow on their chest, the thorax, but they have these distinct black and blue striped abdomens. They're quite cute. And they're actually buzz pollinators, so hence the buzzing, because they fly to a flower and then they buzz using their body to shake the flower and douse themselves in pollen, and then they fly to another flower and do the same thing. So they actually help cross-pollinate in that way.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is really cool.
What are the differences between our bee, the blue-banded bee, and the European bee?
Yep. So the European honeybee was introduced to Australia with agriculture to pollinate crops, where a lot of people don't know, Australia has about 1,700 native species of bees, and a lot of them might actually be helpful with crop pollination as well. And in Canberra, you definitely see the blue-banded bee buzz around the garden, particularly the bright-coloured flowers as well. So classic European honeybee, you know, the black and yellow, and Aussie bees actually come in so many different shapes and sizes. The smallest one is about 2.5 millimetres, and the biggest one is 25 millimetres.
Oh my gosh, nearly an inch.
Yeah, yeah.
So where can we find the really big bee?
Yeah, carpenter bees are found all over Australia. Because they're so big, people might automatically think that they're wasps if they buzz near them, but they're actually bees. They're out there pollinating our native flowers. It's pretty cute. They're called carpenter bees because they actually lay solitary burrows in timber or rotting logs to lay their eggs as well. That's a great thing about Aussie bees. Most of them don't sting. They actually don't have stingers. Because why would they want to like waste all their energy in stinging you and die like a honeybee? Because they've got too much pollination to do. They've got too many larvae to look after as well. Because that's the interesting thing about Aussie bees is most of them are solitary, which means that they live alone.
Oh, they don't live in a hive.
Yeah, they don't live in a hive like a European honeybee. So they don't work together in that sort of sense. They don't have the hive mind, where European honeybees have the hive basically to look after thousands of larvae in the one spot, where native solitary bees actually go out. The female will carve a little hole either in a piece of mud or in a log or a tree trunk, and then she'll deposit an egg, and then she'll fly around, slurp up some nectar, do a little buzz shake dance in the flower to get pollen, bring it back to the little tube that she's made and feed the egg, and then she'll seal it. And then when that egg hatches, that little larva has all the food it can need until it pupates. So she's got hundreds probably of eggs to look after. So she's got no time for this hive business, essentially.
God, she really is the definition of a busy bee.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Meanwhile, the males, they don't show any maternal care. They don't build the nests or the tubes and look after the young. They literally just find a spot of flowers, and they sit there all day and buzz, and they're territorial, fight off other males because they're fighting for the attention of the female bees. And then they mate, and then that's pretty much their role.
Wow.
The cute thing is that all the males, you think they'd hate each other because they're sparring all day for the attention of the females, when actually they go to sleep together. So the males actually find, you know, like that classic photo of a blade of grass, and the males have their jaws clamped down on it, and they're all roosting overnight together. So the reason they do that is because it's safety in numbers. And then when the sun comes out, they pretty much go their own way and butt heads again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's all love and war for an Aussie bee.
So if we want more Australian bees in our backyard, what do we need to do?
Plant native flowering plants. That is the easiest way, for different variety of colours as well, because some species like white, others like purple and magenta. So again, it's just having this beautiful biodiverse backyard is the best way that you can support your native bees and insects in general. You can also get some really awesome or make the bee hotels yourself in the backyard by getting a bunch of twigs together or drilling deep holes.
Thank you, Busy Bee Bri.
Oh, I can't believe we're out of time.
Oh, God.
That was entomologist Dr. Brian Lessard, known as Bri the Fly Guy, speaking to James Finlay. So we have time for On the Country Hour today. This is actually my last show in the presenter's seat. I'm handing back the reins to Callie Buchanan. I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who has contributed to the show over the past year. I've had an absolute blast looking at some of the highlights. I got to take the show on the road, celebrate our 80th birthday, you know, join the great Australian charity cattle drive on its last night. I got to go to Southwest Queensland to speak to people after the flooding there earlier in the year. And it's been an absolute honour to be able to tell all your stories. You're in very good hands with Callie, as you should know. You'll be joining her from Monday. And don't worry, I'm not actually going anywhere because I'm still the Country Hours reporter. So you'll still hear plenty of my stories. And I'll probably be in the presenting seat from time to time when Callie's on leave. But for now, news is coming up. It's 1 o'clock.